And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. And mixed bag of sky conditions today. Even the weather folks can't keep it straight. You know, yesterday they called for a partly sunny day today, and we were all happy. Came in this morning, all the forecasters had changed to cloudy day today. And then the next thing you know, the sun popped out. And it's been kind of a mixed bag since then. Some clouds, some sun, some clouds, some sun. I don't think they know what they're talking about. Not a bad day out there. Temperatures are in the mid-60s. That's actually a touch above normal for this time of year. We will be in for a shock at the beginning of next week. If the long-range forecast is correct, they're talking about more seasonal weather, which means chilly days. It's the middle of October, you know. Open talk to begin the program today. We'll have some special guests a little bit later on the show today. The two most recent distinguished alums named at Butler County Community College, Ray Steffler and Lucille Shapiro. And they're both scheduled to be with us here today to talk about their experiences at BC3 and what they've done since then. Michelle Jameson will be here as well. Michelle works with the Alumni Association and the BC3 Foundation. So we look forward to chatting with them a little bit later on the program today. But open talk to begin with, 283-2525, our number, 283-2525. Somebody asked me if the book has been selected for late this month. The answer is yes. The Couple Next Door by Sherry Lapina will be the book we'll be discussing, and that'll be a couple of Mondays down the road. October 23rd is the date for the next book talk. That selection made by the Slippery Rock Area Library. So a lot of folks like to take a look at the book or even read it beforehand. There you go. The Couple Next Door by Sherry Lapina. I haven't started to read it yet, so I can't give you any hints. Open talk at 283-2525, 283-2525 on the program today. We had discussion earlier this week and actually ran out of time on the open talk segment because we had guests that had already arrived. I was trying to find out if anyone knew when the Wheel Works was torn down in the west end of the city of Butler. And my curiosity was piqued because I had, through a friend, I had come across some old copies of a local magazine that was actually published by WISR back in the 1950s, the early and mid-50s. It was called The Butlerite. I'd never heard of it. I have no idea how long it was published. I have four or five copies here, all from the mid-50s. But in one of the copies, on the cover, it said, "Look inside, a picture of Butler from 5 miles up." And indeed, it was an aerial photograph, I suspect, taken by the U.S. Geological Survey. And I was talking about the fact, obviously, you can see Pullman Standard, and how huge it was. And then I was trying to determine whether or not the Wheel Works was still there. The Wheel Works down near the intersection with the Pillow Street there, actually right across the street from where our studios are now located. So if anyone knows, the picture is dated 1950. And I can't tell, it's a little bit fuzzy, 5 miles up. So if anyone knows when the Wheel Works ceased operation or was torn down, give me a buzz. Happy to talk to you about it. Okay, let's get to the people today. It's open talk after all, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
This is Doris Chura.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
I was wondering. Good. Does anybody know the building that's out at Hell's Hollow? What that used to be, that round circular thing?
Well, it's a good question. I do not know. You're talking about out on the edge of McConnell's Mill State Park there. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
I said you're out at McConnell's Mill State Park area, right? Hell's Hollow.
Right.
Yeah.
My cousin was out there from Pittsburgh the other day, and he asked me, and I didn't have a clue.
Well, maybe somebody knows. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it right near the parking area, or do you know?
I'm not sure how to explain it.
Okay, well, if you knew more than just a circular building, is it in a clearing?
Well, it's not a building. It looks like it used to be maybe what? It looks like a well, maybe. You can only go at the top and look down in.
How big is it? Is it as big as a silo or?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe somebody knows, Doris, and we'll invite them to give us the info. Nice to talk to you today.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye. Thank you, Doris. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. I started to look at this aerial photograph mainly to see what Butler looked like before the Route 422 bypass went in. And I knew that that was constructed sometime in the 1960s. I'm not sure the exact date, mid-60s. I think they started working on it. But this photograph is dated October 16th, 1950. So it was exactly at this time of year, mid-October, 1950. And Lucindia Butler looked a little smaller than it does now. Back in those days, first of all, you can see that the picture is cut off about halfway up Newcastle Hill. However, you can see, very plainly, the racetrack at the old fairgrounds, where the Butler Senior High School is now located, the Butler Senior High campus. That used to be the Butler Fairgrounds, which now, of course, is out in Prospect along Route 422, the big Butler Fairground. That's why the road that leads up to the campus from Hanson Avenue is called Fairground Hill Road. But I knew the fairgrounds were there, of course, before the high school was built. I did not realize how close the racetrack was to Newcastle Road. It's right next to it. I mean, not the whole thing. One end of the, it's a huge oval, or was a huge oval. It's not there anymore. But one end of it was right up next to Newcastle Road. And where the main entrance was, I don't know. I can't tell that. Again, this photo is a little bit fuzzy. But I was interested. I can see Pullman Park. So I got my bearings there. You can also clearly see the original path of the Conequenessing Creek before the Army Corps of Engineers rerouted the creek. So we still had the island back in those days. We still call that part of Butler the island, but not really an island anymore because the creek bed isn't there anymore. But that's fascinating to look at. Well, anyway, from the Butlerite magazine of, this one is dated January 1955. Don't know how long this magazine existed. It seems a little primitive when you look back at it, but hey, you know, that's what? 60 years ago, right? Yeah, approximately. It's a long time ago. And to have a local magazine at all must have been pretty neat. I believe some of the WISR staffers at the time worked on it. I see Bob Kaufman's name in here, for one. A lot of the other names I don't know. I wasn't around then. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. The advertisement on the back cover was for a brand-new Packard. A full-page ad. Brand new Packard, introducing torsion bar suspension, revolutionary, new, 1955 Packard. V8 engine. You don't find that anymore either, do you? No, not in this day and age. And the dealership that sold Packards, I didn't even know they were still making Packards in the mid-50s. The dealership that sold them was A.R. Bortz, which from the address, it says 422 west of Butler at the Point. That must be what we now call the Point Plaza. It would have been because there was no 422 bypass then. Never heard of that dealership. 283-2525 is our number. Let's get to the people. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Dave, in reference to the wheel work she was talking about.
Yes.
I work for Pullman.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Pullman owned that land originally. Then they sold it to Armco for the wheel works.
Mm-hmm. They made railroad car wheels there, right? Isn't that what they did? They made wheels for railroad cars, right?
Armco did, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when Pullman purchased it back, I know I worked there 2 years, in 1971 and 1972.
Oh, so it was still open then, huh?
It was called Pullman Plant 2.
Huh, wow.
And we resurfaced the inside of covered Harper cars.
Hmm.
They applied a plastic lining to it. They transported certain grains and some kind of chemical pellets. And they had to have a lining in there where they didn't absorb that steel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I know I worked there 71 and 72. Now, I don't know exactly how long that building was there after that. Pullman closed in 1982, I believe.
Now, was the wheel works all one big building, sir?
Yeah, it was all under one roof.
Mm-hmm. And what's there now? Is it that propane gas business? Is that what?
Yes, that's okay. Right on the corner. It was part of the Pullman property.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of empty space around it, so it was a much larger building than the one that's there now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It seems
like
to me.
I don't know exactly when that building was demolished, but it was. I know it was active workplace for Pullman in 1970, 1972, up in that era there.
Must have been a rail line that they could bring those hopper cars right up to the building then, huh?
Well, they brought them up through the tracks there. Then they brought them in a big door,
uh-huh.
And they put rotating trunnions on each end, and they revolved the car the whole way around.
Huh.
You went on one side, then upside down, you went on the roof, then back on the other side. And
that
you resurfaced, you ground that all perfectly smooth.
That is
so when they lined it, that lining didn't protrude. There was no sharp objects in there,
mm-hmm.
but welding.
Fascinating. Well, gosh, I appreciate you sharing the information with me. I knew about the wheel works. I thought I knew where it was, but that's about it. And I had no idea when it shut down.
That's exactly where it was, right there in the corner of Hanson and Pilla.
Yeah. Thanks, my friend. Good to talk with you today.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Let me go to this line next. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave, a couple of quick items. As you were mentioning the fairgrounds,
mm-hmm.
I was just driving down the back entrance to the high school there via the Whitestown Road access point. And as I was driving down there, I remember as a kid that back way was unpaved, and it was like gravel and cinders. And there were a couple of houses, a couple of kind of run-down houses on that hill, which have been raised and the road has been widened a bit and, of course, paved today. But I remember that when it was unpaved. I just wonder if any of your other listeners would remember that.
I'm trying to look. It's right on the edge of my picture here, my photograph. And let me get my bearings because there's so much open space where there's now that whole shopping plaza in there at the corner of Hanson and Whitestown. It's all empty. There's nothing in there. Okay, you're going up. You don't realize.
The, You don't go up the hill from Hanson.
Mm-hmm. You don't realize until you're looking at it from the air how big of a curve there is in that road right there, past what's now the Vagabond Center. Okay, now I see the intersection. But it looks like there's some sort of a primitive road. There's foliage, you know. There's a lot of trees. I guess there is still trees along the edge of that road, isn't there now?
Yeah, it was a primitive road, and I remember driving down there with my father and the family, and it was unpaved. Another road that I remember being unpaved was the road to Alameda Park, and of course that would be the one that comes out from the city, like a Penn Street extension.
Mm-hmm.
There was also, and there still is today, an access from old Route 422, which we call now Route 356, because none of that development was there, where the fitness place and there's a farm something service off of old Route 422. There was a road that went down that way too, and again, just a kind of a dirt road, unpaved. And when I started working at Alameda Park, the very first summer the county took over the park, 1967. I could access Alameda Park via that road, provided that it hadn't been raining and was too muddy or treacherous. But there's another road that was unpaved. Actually, all of Alameda Park was accessible by unpaved roads. The other thing I was thinking about, and you mentioned it, that there are these maps that were shot, these aerial photographs. And what I'm going to do, I've looked at them, and there is a link to, I think, hundreds of them. I'm not sure exactly when they were taken, 30s, 40s, 50s, but I'll try to send you a link to those, as well as some pictures that I discovered of the construction of the Route 422 bypass, which are fascinating pictures.
Oh, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I'll try to send those to you.
Well, there's limited information identifying this. The date is on there, October 16, 1950. It says the plane was about 5 to 6 miles high. During World War II, reconnaissance planes were sent to photograph proposed targets. Yikes. Wow.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. The aerial photographs similar to this one were then studied carefully, and the bombing areas were explained to the pilots. Wow. Wow, that's scary. That is scary. Well, I don't know. I'm fascinated by this. I just wish the resolution was a little better. Obviously, 1950, so that's a long time ago.
Well, just keep in mind that during the Cold War, when it really got revved up and going into the 60s and into the 70s, both the United States and the Soviet Union had so many nuclear weapons. You can only drop so many on a city like Pittsburgh before you kind of wipe it out. So you have to start looking for secondary targets. Mm-hmm. And I think Butler would have been a secondary target because of our steel industry.
And the rail cars, yeah, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
So, oh, look at this. Let me keep you for just one more second here.
Sure.
I'm just reading more of the legend next to this map. Surprise air raid against this area could cause tremendous casualties. Volunteer civilian plane spotters can help provide early warning. I can remember when I was a really, really small kid. I'm guessing, 6 or 7 years of age. There was one of these civilian spotter locations about 5 or 6 miles from my childhood home. It was up between Foxburg and St. Petersburg, if you're familiar with that area at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason that this is, I'm so solid about this memory, is it was in the middle of a Christmas tree farm. And we would, go up there, and not every year, but at least sometimes, that's where we'd get our Christmas tree. And one time, I don't know, the civilian spotter must have known my dad, I don't know. But I ended up inside that building. And they had a what amounted to a parabolic microphone on the roof. And it was all glass around the sides. And this guy would sit in there, and if he heard a plane coming, he picked up binoculars. And they were, I mean, it's kind of scary to think about, isn't it?
Well, that had to be pre NORAD and
it would have been during the height of the Cold War. You never, whenever they told us, you know, we had the practice drills at school where you crawled under your desk and put your hands over your head like that was going to protect you from a nuclear bomb.
Well, but they established what they called the Dew Line, which was a series of radar stations up in Canada and across Alaska.
Yeah.
Because a buddy of mine I used to teach with when he was in the Air Force, he was assigned to duty up there somewhere, and they were always listening and watching radar for the approach of bombers, or I guess later they'd look at missiles, but earlier it was bombers before they had the intercontinental ballistic missiles carrying weapons. Well, listen, I'm going to leave you with that delightful, warm memory of the Cold War. So.
Thanks, my friend.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's not not to scare anybody, but I saw an article on the Wire. It was just a week ago that the residents of Hawaii are very quietly making preparations for a possible strike from North Korea. And you talk about a sobering story to read. You know, they're not trying to panic people or anything like that, but they are quietly, you know, urging people to stockpile some water and supplies. And, you know, Hawaii, obviously a heck of a lot closer to North Korea than the continental U.S. Whew, that is scary. Dew Line, I forgot all about that. It stood for something. The EW was early warning, but I can't remember what the D stood for, Dew Line. And that caller was right. It was up around the Canadian-U.S. border, I believe. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Let's go to this line. Hi, caller, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Dave, I think I can help you out a little bit with that Wheelworks thing.
Oh, please. Thank you.
I hired into Armco in 1955, and the old Wheelworks was still at the main plant at that time.
Okay.
And I think it was late 50s, probably, I'm thinking 1958, they shut it down in the main plant and moved it up to the location up to where you're talking about. And I know it was there in the early to mid-60s, but it wasn't long after that, I think, they stopped making them altogether, and it ceased to exist at that point.
That surprises me, because I just always assumed that since it was right next to the Pullman plant, that's where it always was. Seems logical.
I'm not sure about this, but I think they just made rail wheels for maybe locomotives. Don't quote me on that, but I'm not sure Pullman ever used the wheels that were made at Armco.
Uh-huh. Well, there was also a plant or a subsidiary or something else that made axles, right, for rail cars down there somewhere. And
I'm not familiar with that.
I think that even continued to operate at least for a while after the Pullman plant shut down.
Could be.
But my memory's very, very foggy on that, and I may be
totally out. It may have been associated with
Pullman. Yeah, I may be out in left field, but I'm pretty sure they made axles, or because, you know, an axle for a rail car is gargantuan, you know.
Can't help you there, but I don't know about the Wheelworks. I don't think it was up where the location you're talking about very long.
Hmm.
It didn't go up there until, I think, 1958.
That's a fascinating bit of information. Yeah. Thanks for sharing, my friend.
Sure. Thanks.
Yeah, good to talk with you. The industrial history of the Butler area. It's fascinating, isn't it? You know, even for me, and I wasn't around then, but it's fascinating. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave.
Howdy.
This is your brother's neighbor lives on down the road from him. Turn that down.
How you doing?
Good. Well, I worked at the Wheelworks in 59 and 61 out of reserve. And they run two turns,
mm-hmm.
And they were ingots specially made for the wheels, and you heated them in a rotary furnace. They were cut into pieces,
mm-hmm.
the size of the wheel they needed, and they It was called a nicking aisle, and they had several knives, and they cut them down so far, and then they stalked the furnace at midnight
mm-hmm.
turn,
mm-hmm.
and this guy had a hydraulic wedge, like, or a wedge, and they split those with the...
Get them closer to the right thickness, huh?
No, they split those after they cut them and took them down so far, maybe 5 inches or so,
uh-huh.
and they used a wedge and a hydraulic, and they split them, and then they load them into the furnace. It was a circular furnace. It was rotated, and they put 5 to a row. And by the time we got there and working daylight, those were ready to be taken out. And they would go in with this, like an arm, like, and go in there, and they'd pick them up and bring them back out. And then they'd get down the wagon, like, or buggy that went down, and they hit the water and knock some of the scale off. And
mm-hmm,
then they,
mm-hmm.
I worked in the press where they took them down so far with the first die, and then they switched dies, and then that was the wheel die.
I was going to ask you how they finally shaped them into a wheel. They stamped them, huh, under heavy pressure.
Well, that was, I don't mind what that was called. But anyhow, they went on through down the line, and I run the punch where they punched a hole in the wheel.
Hmm.
They were different sizes. And, you had to adjust that for the different size wheel.
Yeah.
And they went to I forget what it was called. It was under hydraulic pressure anyway, and that's how they formed the wheel.
You can imagine, listeners, even if you never rode on a train, the tremendous wear and tear. I mean, you've got steel on steel, you know,
yeah.
Railroad reels on rails. So they took a beating. Wheels took a beating.
Yeah, they then beyond this, that'd be going south by the past that nicking aisle, they had the finish department. If you had a defect in the wheel, then they cleaned that up with they laid them down or sideways, I mean, which all way it went. Anyhow, they had inspectors, and they inspected all the wheels. And they had another system to check for cracks, minor cracks in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they... Pullman did get... It all depended on the customer. Pullman did get a few wheels from Armco.
I see.
Not a whole lot. But I worked at Plant 2 after... Well, I went to Plant 2 in 61. I hired in 59.
Mm-hmm.
And you could walk down there, and they always had the rail cars right beside the building where we walked in. And you could see... The Armco wheels, because they was all nice and clean, yet, and all the other wheels that come, they were rusty.
The golden age of heavy industry in Butler, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
They were. I think the wheels were made by U.S. Steel, and I can't tell you where. I know the axles at Pullman. I worked at Pullman for 14 months, and that was the end of the big run. And later I got a job with Armco.
Hmm.
And anyhow, I worked at Pullman, and that was just the beginning of the roller bearings. They had the old journal boxes, and they had the waste in there, and they had a can to go along and put a bit of oil in. And where was it going?
So the original wheels didn't have bearings in them, you mean?
No, the axles.
Oh, the axles, okay.
They had a bearing in there. It wasn't. Was it a bearing? No, well, it wasn't a bearing. It was a brass or something.
You need some kind of a mechanism out on the end where you attach the wheel. Yeah.
And the roller bearings, they were. We took so much off in these old lathes that had a World War I ordnance stamp on them. They were that old when they were badly wore. Whenever you'd get there. Where the bearing went on, you'd have to go back, you get it over so far, and then you'd have to look to see when where you come for the wheel seat. When the wheel seat started, you had to tap it down a few notches to get it to where you wanted it.
Well, sir, I really thank you for sharing. I had no idea how this was all done, and it's fascinating to me. And I appreciate you giving us a call and sharing the info.
Okay. That's how that was all done.
Great to talk with you. Great to talk with you. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. 283-2525. We have time for one more call before our guests arrive. Caller, you've got the last word. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Okay. Hi, Dave. I just wanted to comment on your question about the axles.
Yes.
I worked at Pullman up till 82 when they closed. I was the inspector in the wheel and axle shop. Mm-hmm. And after they shut down, Kenny Higgins, who was the boss in the wheel and axle shop, actually bought Allegheny Axle and started that company.
That's the name I was trying to think of, Allegheny Axle. And it was right down there, right? It was in the same general area.
He was right across, down on the island there.
Mm-hmm.
He was down there. So that's how they kept on producing the axles.
And that operated for some time, didn't it, after Pullman closed?
Yes. I'm not sure how many years. I moved on,
mm-hmm.
of course. But that's what happened. They produced those. I can't tell you how many years he had that business, but they kept on making them right here in Butler.
Well, I sure wish we still had the rail lines and the rail industry that we had decades ago. It would be a godsend today to help us with mm-hmm. mass transit and everything else, to say nothing of the industry needed to supply the rail lines, you know. They're almost gone here in the United States, and in most other countries of the world, it's still a big industry. Europe, Asia, you know, they got trains all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a sad situation there.
Thanks for remembering Allegheny Axle. I'd have stewed over that for another couple of hours, I think.
Okay, Dave. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Good to talk about these things, huh? Yeah. And appreciate so many people giving us info here today. Okay, well, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, our guests are going to be joining us. We're going to be talking with the latest named distinguished alums from Butler County Community College. They're going to be honored at a big dinner this weekend, so please stick around. We'll meet them and talk to them coming up in a couple of minutes here on It's Your Turn on WISR.
There's no denying we enjoy dining out, and we love to cut a rug on occasion as well. It's my pleasure to announce that you can put that dining and dancing together at Tanglewood every second Saturday of the month. A buffet dinner prepared by Chef George starts at 6 o'clock. Dancing from 7 till 10, just $16 per person. Come for just the dance and pay only $8. As always, it's BYOB. Break out your dancing shoes and work up an appetite for Tanglewood's dinner dance every second Saturday of the month. Call 287-0021 for reservations.
For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Welcome back, friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. And we welcome our guests visiting with us on the next segment of the program. I'm chuckling, and I'll tell you why in just a moment or so. Michelle Jameson is here from Butler County Community College. Michelle, good to see you. Nice to have you with us today.
You too, Dave.
Michelle works with the Foundation and with the Alumni Association, right?
I do. 13 and a half years.
And you are gearing up for the annual dinner to honor distinguished alums.
We are. It'll be tomorrow.
And we are very pleased and honored to have one of them sitting here with us right now.
We are. We're very lucky.
Yeah.
It took some talking to get him here.
Ray Steffler, good to see you. Good to see you.
Nice to see you, Dave.
Just was out in the lobby and shook hands with Ray, and I said, it's been a long time since you and I shook hands.
Yes, it has been.
Good to see you. There's another distinguished alum who's going to be honored at the dinner tomorrow night, and who's that, Michelle?
It's Lucille Shapiro.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, both of you attended Butler County Community College, right?
We did, and approximately the same time, near the end, as Lucille graduated before I did,
mm-hmm.
is that, and she was... What year did she graduate?
She graduated in 73.
73. I started in 74.
Okay.
Going to school.
Now, the college just marked its 50th anniversary, what, two or 3 years ago?
Yes,
something
we
like
2 years ago, yes.
Mm-hmm. So you were one of the early students there.
I was one of the very early students. I think that Butler County Community College was a tremendous asset to this community through the vision of some people early on. And... enjoyed my stay there, and I had the good fortune to be appointed a trustee by Jim Green.
And you're still a trustee, aren't you?
I've been a trustee since 1985.
Yeah, he's our longest-running trustee.
You may be one of the longest-running college trustees in Pennsylvania,
yeah,
right?
Pretty close.
Well, that's an admirable track record indeed.
Well, it's been a good ride. I've enjoyed it. I've watched the institution grow from what it was then and to what it is today, and I think we're extremely successful. Mm-hmm. And we have an outstanding team leading the college at the present time.
Tell us about, first of all, there's a dinner tomorrow night to honor Ray and Lucille, right?
We have our Oak Hills dinner, and we have that every year. I was just looking back. It'll be our 12th dinner this year, and the purpose of the dinner is threefold. We recognize our distinguished alumni, which is Ray and Lucille, and then we also congratulate the students who receive scholarships for the 17-18 academic year. And then a big purpose for the evening is to thank our donors.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And this dinner, in its 12-year history, has become rather huge, has it not?
It is. It has continued to grow. Actually, I'm the one that's groaning, but it has continued to grow. And this year we have a nice crowd this year as well, and we're trying to get it so it's not as crowded as it has been, so it's more comfortable. It's the biggest thing we do at BC3. It's my favorite thing. It gives me a chance to bring the students and the donors together, the scholarship recipients, and that's fun to be able to facilitate that.
I think if you're a donor, that has to give you a great sense of satisfaction. So it's not just a name on a piece of paper. Here's the person that I helped to get through school, you know.
Very much so.
Well, and Ray has had the opportunity to meet his recipients. Ray has the Steffler Family Scholarship there, and he's been coming every year we've had it, and has had opportunity to meet his recipients from his family scholarship there.
You're absolutely right, Dave. It's a nice feeling to meet the person that's going to be the recipient of the gift that's been put forth to help their education. And it's just nice to shake their hand, meet one of their family members or both of their family members, is because it's interesting to listen to the students and their story of what their visions for their future are.
Mm-hmm.
And I thoroughly enjoy that, and that's what really has kept me passionate about the institution for all these years, is listening to the students And that's basically everything we've tried to do is for the students. And we have how many
students
scholarships this year?
We have 100, about 120 scholarships. We awarded those to about 150 students. So
I attended the dinner once several years ago, and one of our colleagues here was named a distinguished alum, and it was Mike Franco.
Mike Franco. I was there that evening. Mm-hmm. Good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. But I agree. It was great to see the students there who were, they were all smiles. The individuals who had sponsored scholarships were all smiles getting to see them. It was a very nice night.
It is nice. I think one of the most effective things that I think is neat is we have all the students who receive scholarships stand up. And it's really kind of neat to see in a huge Founders Hall that all these students are standing up. And it's because of the generosity of the donors that have made a difference. And they've actually made this event happen. They've made great things happen for our students. And I just really love the fact that all these students stand up and the donors can see all these students whose lives have been changed by their gifts. And it's great.
Can people obviously can still become a donor or fund a scholarship if they so desire, can't they?
Oh, sure. And I'd be happy to talk with anybody who'd like to learn more about our scholarship program. The one thing I really like about our scholarship program is it's very doable. It's for regular people. When I first started working with scholarships, I had the idea that, you know, basically you had to be rich to be able to have a scholarship, especially one that would be endowed and last forever. But we've worked out ways to do it that regular people, average income people, can do a scholarship. I have a scholarship, and I started one in my own name because as a BC3 alum and knowing the benefits of the scholarships, and I would have loved it if when I was going to school having to receive a scholarship. So I wanted to start one to help a student who was like me, a non-traditional student who was working towards their degree. So, you know, we allow donors to take 5 years to get the principal endowed, and we really work well, and it's so surprising to people that you can just be a regular person and create a scholarship that's endowed and lasts, and you'll be able to touch a student's life forever, and it's really quite cool.
you don't have to be John Beresford Tipton to create a scholarship in your name or your family's name. There's a name out of the past, Michelle.
I was going to say, I've never even heard of him.
Who the heck is John Beresford Tipton?
I don't know.
There was
who
a
that
TV
is.
Show. Who knows when? I know it was in black and white, so it had to be ages ago.
Okay.
But it was, in fact, it was called The Millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, it was a weekly show, and every week he gave $1 million to some unsuspecting person in, you know, Topeka or St. Louis or something like that. And
wow.
The guy would deliver a $1 million cashier check to them.
Wonder if he's still alive.
No, he's not.
I'd like to talk to him.
I remember the show. But to the point that Michelle was making is that Lucille was involved in the Alumni Association actually before I was, but it was almost non-existent at that point in time. And then as time went on and I had graduated and I could see a need for alumni, and I was working from my side of the ledger as a trustee. Lucille was working from that side of the ledger as an outside person looking in. And along the way, we come together, and we were able to form the Alumni Association. We struggled for a number of years, and then we had the good fortune of hiring Michelle. And from that time forth, the organization has blossomed to where it is today.
Well, you have to realize, too, that in the early years, that probably wasn't what a lot of people are thinking about. A lot of other fish to fry when you're starting
correct.
A school from scratch. And for at least a few years, the number of alumni wouldn't have been a tremendous number.
Well, that's the whole point. I think the first graduating class was 200 and some students. Well, here we are 50 years later, there's thousands. Mm-hmm. So the fact is that you have an opportunity to broaden the opportunity to give back to the institution, and we try to instill Pioneer Proud in all our graduates, and that's where I think we have become very successful. We have alumni in every state in the Commonwealth, in the United States, and
well, there's
Ecuador
and other European countries too.
So the fact is
we're out there
worldwide, but the fact is that we are BC3 and we are Pioneer Proud, and that's what it was all about. And Lucille had a vision, I had a vision, and we were able to work this thing together to where we are today. And I'm very excited about the future, is that we've had some, through the foundation, have had some rather significant gifts over the last several years, and we're very grateful for those gifts because they've given us the opportunity to build some facilities to make it much nicer to come to BC3. If you've been to the new library, it's a learning center now. It was the library. It was a result of a rather significant contribution.
Thanks to Mr. Bob Heaton and
that's
family.
Absolutely correct. And it's a state of the arts. I mean, you will go a long way to find one any better or equal to at this stage in time. But that's what we can do with the money that's brought forth. The Alumni Association, I would like to have a large contribution, but I think we have to be realistic that just the scholarships would be a real advantage to help some other student obtain at least a 2-year degree from BC3, and they always have that opportunity to transfer to some 4-year institution, which we transfer a lot of students. Slippery Rock University is one of our leading transfer points for our students.
Yeah. Although Butler County Community College is a very affordable institution of higher education to attend, certainly compared with most other places, it's still, there's a lot of expenses for students starting out. Number one, and it's something new for most students, you've got to buy books, which you didn't have to do when you went to high school. Huh?
Yeah, and books are expensive, but the one thing, too, that when I'm working with donors, we talk about, there's the cost to go to college. So there's not only the tuition and books, but because we are a community college and a commuter college, the students have that cost of getting to college. So there's vehicle expenses, there's gas. For those that don't have a vehicle, they have to look at bus passes and those kind of things. So there are outside costs. So BC3 is very affordable and a great education, but there's other external costs involved with going to school. And every bit helps our students gain their education and meet their dreams for education and a higher education degree.
We'll take a break. We'll talk more with our guests here on It's Your Turn on WISI in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today, DBS Telecommunications, a local company, Butler Company, telephone equipment dealer and data network installer, serving the entire region, Butler and surrounding areas too. They sell, install, and repair telephones for your office, primarily commercial telephone and voicemail systems. They've been around, folks, 32 years here in the Butler area. We know them well at Butler Radio Network because we have utilized their expertise and their service for many, many years. Just saw one of their technicians here at the radio station within the past couple of weeks. They specialize in phone systems, custom-designed networks, including fiber optics. I'm going to have to learn how those work one of these days. You know, you look at that fiber optic cable and you say, How does it carry my voice? How does it carry all that data? DBS Telecommunications can install that stuff for you. Also, high-quality hybrid digital telephone systems, high-definition surveillance camera systems, multi-door entry access systems, overhead commercial paging. They also do cabling for voice data and cable television wiring. DBS Telecommunications. Here's a phone number. Call them today. Find out more about their service, how they can help you. Phone number is 724 285 9088 or check them out online at dbs-tel.com. DBS Telecommunications. We'll be back to talk more with our guests here on It's Your Turn right after these words.
At the best of times, being lonely can be dispiriting. But when you're grieving because of the loss of a loved one, you need someone to talk to be with. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler offers a unique, sensitive program called Someone's Caring. It's meticulously designed to help ease the emotional pain, to fill the gap when you're lonely. Men and women are invited to attend, and yes, men too are realizing it's okay to express their feelings at a small group setting. We've held hundreds of sessions in the last 20 years, have helped hundreds of folks to cope with their feelings. We have five programs: a grief support group for those who have lost a loved one, for survivors of a suicide, for bereaved parents, for those who have lost a pet, for individual sessions. They're conducted by our own trained bereavement specialist, Robin S. Miller. Call us at Thompson Miller, 724-287-3706, 287-3706. We can help. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
Welcome back, good friends. The guy I should have asked about fiber optics was one of our guests here, Ray Steffler, because he worked in the telephone industry for a long, long time, North Pittsburgh Telephone.
That's correct. Yeah, 45 years.
Mm-hmm. So I look at one of these, you know, these lawn lights you have that they're solar powered and they flash different colors, you know, in like a dragonfly or a sunflower or something. They got these on Christmas tree lights, too.
Yes.
That's fiber optics, right? I don't understand that either.
We used to say it was smoke and mirrors. But it's an amazing technology that has expanded today, that it's pretty much the common mode of communications today in the telephone industry as well as in your broadcast.
Oh, yes, without question. Now, you also, in addition to your work in the telephone industry, Ray Steffler, Ray has been named Distinguished Alumnus for Butler County Community College this year, along with a fellow alum, Lucille Shapiro. And they'll both be honored at the Oak Hills dinner tomorrow night. Now, you served for a long time as an aide to former Senator Mary Jo White.
That is correct. When I retired in 1999 from the telephone company, in June of 2000, this job that I'm presently occupying, it's a legislative aide field rep for Senator Mary Jo White, opened up. She brought me up on board, and here I am 17 years later doing the same thing, which I totally enjoy, dealing with the legislative connection to the community of trying to make things happen for communities through funding or just guiding the communities to put together plans to obtain funding. And it's becoming more and more difficult, as everybody knows, if reading the papers and listening to the news, that the state budget has been a real struggle here the last several years. But it's still a challenging job, but it's an interesting job.
It's even more critical, I think, for State Senate because you've continued as a legislative aide for now Senator Scott Hutchinson.
Correct.
Who took over when Senator White retired. Both of them frequent guests, by the way, on this program. I enjoyed talking many times with Senator White and most recently with Senator Hutchinson. But that legislative district goes from Butler County all the way up to the New York state line.
It does.
So that's a big footprint, and without aides in the home office.
That's correct.
To help people with their questions and to get to the right place, you'd go crazy. It's a huge territory.
It is very large, and I'm fortunate enough, I'm out of the Butler District office, so we pretty much just stay within Butler County. We have other people in my same capacity in the counties to the north. Mm-hmm. Is that we go from Cranberry Township clear to Warren, PA.
That's up by the Kinzu Dam, for goodness sake.
Yes, it is. It's to the New York border.
Wow.
For all intents and purposes.
The Seneca Reservation's right up there.
That is true.
So have you enjoyed your work in that capacity over the last many years now?
I have, and it's enlightening. It's 180 degrees out of phase at working at the telephone company.
Mm-hmm.
Is at the telephone company, it was hands-on, and you could make things happen, like right now. That doesn't always happen when you're working in government, mm-hmm. is that things take a little longer. And but it's still rewarding at the end of the day.
And when were you appointed as a trustee of Butler County Community College? That was back in the 80s, wasn't it?
July of 1985 is when I was appointed by the Butler County Commissioners to the board. And I had the good fortune to be recommended by Jim Green, who was a former county commissioner who had the vision to establish with the other two county commissioners the community college. And so I feel honored at the fact that the man that's had the vision for the college saw something in me to point me as a trustee to the college. And that's one of the things that I think that kind of drove the passion for me. If somebody thought that much of me at that time, is that I should carry the burden that he put upon me. And there's a lot of other people along the way that have inspired me.
I always had great respect for the late Jim Green. I didn't know the man well. It was only on a professional basis. Mm-hmm. I certainly didn't know him personally. But he, to me, always, even when he disagreed with people, it was done in a very civil way.
He was a gentleman.
Yes, a good way to put it,
he
Ray.
He was a gentleman. And I actually met Jim from the telephone company. I was serving on the 911 Communications Council, committee that drives the 911 center, mm-hmm. and that's where I met Jim. And there was several years I've actually served on that much longer than I've been at the college, and that's how I met Jim. And then through just attending meetings, and that's how it all started.
Do you know? And I don't know the answer to this question. None of us may here, but back when the community college was getting started, the state legislature passed enabling legislation.
Right.
There were no community colleges before this. A county or a school district could
Correct.
Sponsor a community college if you wanted to start one. In almost all cases, it was counties. There was a couple that were started by
Correct.
A school district.
Correct.
But there was from what I understand, there was a deadline. You had a certain time period when you could Correct. Do this, and then the enabling law ran out, and we ended up with, I think we have 14 of them right now.
Right.
But when the Board of County Commissioners here in Butler County decided, well, this sounds like a good idea, let's sponsor a community college, they were sued.
Yes, mm-hmm. they were.
They were sued by taxpayers who didn't want anything to do with a community college.
That's correct. There was a Community College Act of 1964, and that formed, there were supposed to be 28 community colleges. And the movement was put forth, and that's when Jim Green and the two seated county commissioners besides himself decided Butler County should have one. And they went forth, and in 1965 is when it was actually formed.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yes, there it went to the lawsuit, and there was a judge, Clyde Shoemaker, was the determining judge that said that what the county commissioners were doing was legal. And that's how it went forth. But there was some interesting things happening while they were trying. They were actually going out buying property. They bought the golf course up in where we're presently located.
Right. The main campus used to be
a golf course.
In fact, it was called Oak Hills Golf Course.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's why we're the Oak Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a gentleman, Gail Rose, who was the superintendent of Armco Steel. He was very active as the first board chair. They had to borrow some money to get this thing off the ground because we were in litigation.
Mm-hmm.
He actually put his property up for collateral for this money that they borrowed so the community college could start their activity of buying property because there was a time limit to get it moving. You're right.
Yeah, there was a deadline. If there was a deadline. Get done, and you were out.
And I find that rather inspiring that I'm not so sure that I would put my property up as collateral, and I'm not too sure many people. But Gail Rose had that passion. He also had a wife named
Doris.
Doris.
I knew her well.
She was a sweetheart, and she was on the board when I come on, and her passion and listening to the story. Now her husband had passed away before I come on. Everything I know about this come from her.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't talk too much about it, as that she was that type of person. But she was a dear, dear lady, very enthusiastic. There were several other people on the board, Nancy Murren and John Beck. And these are the people that I was involved with in the beginning of my members on the board. And I just felt, you know, these people had this vision. You know, and Nancy Murren told me one time, Ray, she said, if you're going to be a trustee, get involved. And now, you have to know Nancy. She was in the Marine Corps during the Second World War as a secretary, but she was a very, very lovely lady.
We were fortunate to have such people with such determination back in those early days.
Absolutely.
Commissioners being sued and people having to put up their house as collateral to get the college started. And you know, Jim Green, and I don't know the other two commissioners at the time. But
I don't either.
What insight? I mean, can you imagine this great institution that we have today, and if it had not gotten off the ground because they were sued and they didn't hold their ground, the commissioners didn't stand their ground?
Absolutely. And Butler County Community College was the first community college in the western part of the states. That's why they were called the Pioneers.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm learning all kind of stuff from you today, Ray.
Well, the interesting is that there is a variety of ways of sponsorship to county and school districts. And the interesting is how the trustees of each of those entities get appointed. In the school districts, you're elected.
Uh-huh.
Within the county-sponsored districts, you are appointed by the county commissioners.
Hmm.
So it makes a little bit of a different flavor. Well, as the thing worked its way through, only 14 survived. There actually was 15. One of them went away. It actually ended up being Penn State, a technical school that's up along 80. I can't remember the name of it right now. That was a community college, too, but Penn State took it over. But there's 14 of us left, and we were number one in Western Pennsylvania.
So
plus, we're also number one community college in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We were voted at several years ago, so we're proud of that.
I didn't realize that BC3 predated CCAC, yep. Community College of Allegheny County. Let's see, there's Beaver County.
There's Beaver, there's Westmoreland, and there's always Penn Highland, which is in Johnstown.
Mm-hmm. And rest are all in the other part of the state.
And that's one of the visions that, through my tenure is on the board, is that why there is such a need for education beyond our boundaries, and we have chosen to go to other locations in western Pennsylvania, Mercer County, and as well as Lawrence County, and also Armstrong County, and plus we have a campus at Brockway.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like to do more, but there's always that restraints of dollars.
Yeah.
And we can only do what the dollars allow us to do.
Well, those other campuses are doing very well.
Yes, they do.
They do very well indeed. We're talking, if you joined us a little bit late, maybe just jumped in the car, who's on with Dave? Ray Steffler, longtime trustee Butler County Community College, went to Butler County Community College, attended, and has been selected this year as one of two distinguished alumni, and properly so, along with Lucille Shapiro. Does anybody, can you give us a thumbnail sketch of Lucille? I don't know much about
sure.
Lucille.
Yeah, I think yes, I can give you a thumbnail sketch of Lucille. I met Lucille in 1997 whenever the BC3 Alumni Association was just starting, and they were looking for community volunteers to come on and be a volunteer, be an alumni volunteer. And Lucille had, as Ray had mentioned, was one of the original, her and Ray were kind of the original instigators. And as Ray said, he was kind of like the internal voice, and Lucille was the external voice from an outside alum saying, you know, you need to talk to your alums and you need to keep them connected to BC3. And so, as Ray said, it finally all came together, and in 1997, they put a group of alums together to create the Alumni Association and go out. And so in 1988, they started having meetings and inviting alums. And so that's when I met Lucille and Ray at the same time. So I've known them both for 20 years now, which has been very, very nice for me. But Lucille, she's very interesting. She was here the first day of classes when BC3 opened in 1966.
Now that's a great statistic, mm-hmm. right there.
Yes,
one of the first students, first day it opened.
First day it opened, and she was, what was neat about Lucille was she was one of the first students, but she was also one of our first non-traditional students. So by that, I mean she was a grown-up. She was 36 years old. She had three little kids. And I'm sure that she felt that this BC3 being in her backyard was a huge opportunity. And so she came and she took classes, and she was able to, in 1973, she was able to complete her degree, an associate degree in social sciences, and she transferred that to Slippery Rock, where she got her bachelor's degree and her master's degree. Hmm. But Lucille has always loved BC3 and has been a very strong supporter of BC3. And
she still live in this area?
Oh, she does, sure. She is lives up by North Main Street Church of God, and she would have been with us tonight, but a couple weeks ago I got a phone call that said Lucille was in the hospital. So fortunately for us, she is out of the hospital, and she's saving her strength for tomorrow.
Oh, so she's going to be able to make the dinner.
So
that's
she's
wonderful.
Coming to the dinner. So wonderful. She had, you know, obviously she wanted to do the radio show, but I said, you know, we talked about how it would probably be best for her to save her strength, and I would pretend that I was her on the radio show, and then she would have the strength for the dinner tomorrow.
Well, that's a wonderful decision. Good job, Lucille. It's better that you be there tomorrow.
Right.
That's wonderful. Well, we've been doing the Distinguished Alumni for 14 years. And I don't have an exact count, but I think there's over 30 individuals that we have selected who, basically, when you look at what are the criteria of someone who is a distinguished BC3 alum, and I think both Ray and Lucille really meet the criteria for what makes a distinguished alum. And what I would think criteria would be, it's somebody who loves BC3, and they both do. And so they've really given a lot of themselves to BC3. I say that they've given their time. You know, Ray's been the longest running chair of the trustees, the longest running member of the trustees. Lucille has been an active member of the Alumni Council for over 20 years. And Lucille has also been a volunteer. We had an Act 101 program. She was a volunteer for years with that. And they both really love BC3. They give their time. They share their experience, their knowledge. They've both been very, very good at helping me grow professionally. And neither one of them are shy about sharing their opinions.
That's the way to be.
Well, it is. And by us being able to share our opinions and be honest with each other, we have taken our relationship much more than just a professional relationship. I consider both of these individuals my friends, and that is a true benefit for me.
Well, the reason I ask whether she still lived around the area is because in some cases alums live halfway across the country, the country, and I know they, in most cases they try if they're you know, selected for this really great honor to be named a distinguished alum, they try to come back. Not all of them have been able to make it.
Right. And
But many of them have been able to come on the program, though, and chat with us, and that's been delightful
to hear them tell
their story and talk about how they feel about BC3 and the community college. In fact, I would say probably the majority of them have been on the show with us here.
Well, and I think what's really neat is when I first was hired in 2004 to work as the alumni person and a fundraiser, people said there was the false idea that people who go to a community college and transfer to a four-year school have an allegiance to the four-year school, not the two-year school. And I believe that was false because as a product of BC3, I was much more connected personally to BC3. And as I talked to a lot of my friends went to BC3, and as I talked to them, they all felt the same. And then as I worked with other BC3 alums, it became very evident that people are much more connected to their BC3 experience than their four-year experience, because the faculty and staff at BC3 care about the students, and we know their names, and we go out of our way to help them succeed. And you know, we are connected to our students. And that's something with the large numbers at four-year schools that you can't have. And so the BC3 alums, I think that we really value what BC3 has given to us. I'm always the first to say I wouldn't be where I am without BC3, because I was just not in a position to go away to a four-year school. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, BC3 has been great for me. And Ray, as a grown-up, you know, he couldn't have had kids and been going to a four-year school. It just wouldn't have worked. And Lucille as well.
We hear this from so many of the alums. I remember when Shelley Duffy was here. I remember several years ago,
sure. A
Pittsburgh broadcaster. Shelley Duffy went to BC3.
She did.
And she was named a distinguished alum several years ago, and she had very warm thoughts whenever she visited with us. Got to take a break. Have a few more minutes to chat with our guests. One of our sponsors, folks, it's quite an occasion for Miller Shoes and the Ciprian family. They're celebrating their 125th anniversary. I just saw Jimmy Ciprian 2 days ago. He was here at the station, and he said, we just kicked it off, our 125th anniversary celebration. You know, you think about this. I mean, you hear about businesses celebrating 25 years in business or 50 years. 125 years in business. 215 South Main Street downtown. And as Jimmy said, you know, we literally have served a generation after generation of families from this area. Not just Butler. Ray holds up his hand. He's one of those families. Not just the immediate Butler area, but from all the surrounding area. They've been coming to Miller's Shoes for many, 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 many years. So check them out. There are some great bargains during the 125th anniversary sale, including America's favorite comfort shoes, SAS shoes. Yes, Miller's, your local headquarters for SAS comfort shoes, and so many other brand names that you've heard of, Hush Puppies, Easy Spirit, Foam Treads, Keds, Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Skechers, Asics, Pro-Pet. These are shoe names that you know, and you'll find them all at Miller's, and you'll find a great price too. 125th anniversary sale going on right now, and as always, a big smile from the Ciprians at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. One of our other sponsors is Gone Postal Butler. Have you heard about Gone Postal Butler? They're on Newcastle Road. Well, technically, they're just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande Restaurant. Gone Postal Butler, it's your friendly neighborhood shipping center. They package your items for shipping. Now, that can be a real bag, even if you've got one item. I know it is for me. If you've got several, oh my, this is a great service. And you can ship any way you want. They'll package it up for you. You can ship at FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service, whatever. Many other services offered as well at Gone Postal. copying, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes, greeting cards. They have an official notary there. Sometimes you need that when you're sending something out, right? Right. You can even grab a lottery ticket. Go on Postal Butler. The address is 140 Shockey Lane. It's in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex, right behind Kings and Villa Grande. Phone number, 724-841-0044. Go on Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. We'll be back to talk a few more minutes with Ray and Michelle here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
It seems that almost every day there's news of a breakthrough in healthcare. New medicines and procedures, imaging that opens a new window into the human body. At Butler Health System, interventional radiologist Dr. Thomas Franco understands that even with these breakthroughs, no technology can replace the human side of care.
Every image tells us a story, but there's a bigger picture, and we never lose sight of that. Healthcare is more than practicing medicine. It's about taking the time to understand where every patient is coming from.
For cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. David Schwartzman, that understanding is ultimately the key to better outcomes.
Technology isn't enough. Skill isn't enough. We have all of that. It's about improving the quality of the lives we touch every day.
At Butler, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to. Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Like we're kind of chuckling after every break here, and we are indeed, because I was talking about Miller's Shoes and how generations of families have gotten their shoes there, and Ray said, shoes I'm wearing right now came from Miller's, and my mother and grandmother took me there when I was a little kid.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Michelle said the same thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
I remember the little circus seats that they used to have there. I think they still do.
125th anniversary at Miller's Shoes. Pretty good stuff. I have often thought one of my mentors in this business when I first started here at WISR was the late Margot Pitts.
I remember.
You knew Margot, Ray, obviously. Michelle, I don't know. Maybe
I
not.
Did know.
Did
I
you
did.
Know Margot?
Yes, I did.
Margot was, whenever I started here, she most of her time was spent at the Butler County Community College. She was a professor there. She taught English and speech, I think, mm-hmm. and I don't know what else. She was just only doing a very little bit of radio at that time. Mm-hmm. I think she came into WISR once a week. But I knew her well, and she kind of took me under her wing, and I will always be grateful for that. But Margot was also a great devotee of amateur theater,
yep.
And she worked with all the theater groups around here. She also was pretty much a one-man band in terms of producing yes. every summer season at the Silver Fox Theater up in St. Petersburg, PA. It was just when you say barn theater,
yes.
that's what it was. Mm-hmm. It was a barn. Mm-hmm. And she produced all those shows up there and so on and so forth. And she also started a fledgling theater group at Butler County Community College.
Yes, she did.
In addition to her work as a teacher there. And they had to put their productions on in what's now Founders Hall.
The Convocation Center.
Yeah, it was called the Convocation Center back in those days. Now, that's a wonderful building for what it's used for now. It wasn't the greatest for doing theater because there's no fly system, which is pretty critical.
The stage is
going
not,
to do a show.
The stage is not set up for that type of production.
It's a very shallow stage, and it was just tough. And bless her heart, she did show after show there with the these young students.
I think they were called the Pioneer Players.
Yes,
I think they've changed the name. I think that's what Margot called them.
Yeah. They still have the Pioneer Players out there. They've brought them back.
Well, the point that I wanted to make is, boy, can you imagine if she were still alive?
She would be.
And you could drive her up that new entrance road and say, by the way, here's our theater.
That she'd be starstruck.
Well, she'd fall down. She'd pass out. It would be unbelievable when she saw that theater.
That is an outstanding theater, and the acoustics in that theater have been praised by many performers that have come in there to a theater that small. in a community college has that type of acoustics. And when we built the building, Dr. Bartok was the president at the time. He, the architect, come from Pittsburgh. They laid that out, and it's absolutely wonderful. Interesting. I knew Margot. I went to school with her daughter, Gail. But I can remember as I moved into the community college that, Margot, how active she was.
If she saw that theater, she'd probably want to do Miss Saigon or something like that. That's the show with a helicopter on
that's
stage.
That's exactly right.
There you go.
But look at all the other changes on the physical plant on the main campus. It started out with, again, we go back to a name you brought up, Ray, Gail Rose, the late Gail Rose from Armco. He was superintendent, is that right?
He was superintendent of Armco Steel.
Yeah. And he helped not only to get the college started, but Armco was critical. And, folks, it was a big golf course is what it was.
Yes, it was.
There were no buildings there that could be used for classrooms. They cut down some trees, and Armco threw up some quick buildings.
There were four buildings.
Four of them, rather
Armco
small.
Buildings, and they're still there today.
Armco Steel Building.
Armco Steel Buildings, correct.
And they are still being used today.
Yes,
now,
they
are. That's a good repurposing your physical plant.
And we have retrofitted them several times over the years because obviously things age. But they're still serving their purpose as we speak.
Yeah, the R value has been increased a little bit. Isn't that how you measure insulation?
Yes,
R value.
Yes, it was.
They've and not the original furnaces, but the buildings are still there.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
And that would have been, well, that was the campus. It wasn't only the center of campus.
No,
and now it's on the edge. You know, the whole thing is expanded.
It's very beautiful out there.
The new Student Success Center. I can remember the first time I saw that. It's been open for probably 5 or 6 years now.
That was
2009.
Time flies.
Yeah, it does indeed. What a beautiful building that is.
Yes, it's gorgeous.
And useful. It's not only useful,
well,
but functional.
It's a center point of contact for the student. And
the
way it was before, it was scattered all over campus, and it was very inefficient. Well, that's what the Student Success Center is all about, is it all comes under one roof, and that's where the bookstore is. And that's where all the students obtain all the information that they need to be a successful student.
What I have admired, and I don't just say this because, you know, I live here, and I mean, I definitely think Butler County Community College is a gem, but I admire the way the trustees and the administrations down through the years have closely monitored expansion and these new buildings that have gone up. Without destroying the character of the campus. I don't know whether any of our listeners, probably not too many, if you've ever seen the campus of Westmoreland County Community College. Oh, folks, it looks like a warehouse in the middle of a parking lot. And I don't mean to denigrate, but there's just no comparison to the beautiful campus of BC3.
It's what it evolved from, and in totally different environment. I was very familiar with Westmoreland Community College because spent a lot of time with their president when Dr. Bartok was here. But it just was formed differently. And we were very, very fortunate to be able to develop our campus to where it is.
Yeah, but as a trustee, you know, that takes careful consideration whenever you're considering a new building, or in your case, many new buildings over the years. How do we maintain the character, the natural character of the campus that we have?
It's critical, and the people that we have on our staff, led by Brian Opus, and has been very cognizant of keeping our campus in the whole. I can remember one time we did build a building, and we cut down some oak trees. We heard about it. But it wasn't taken lightly, but there was just no other way of doing it to make the building fit in. And that was the Science and Technology Building, is that we had to cut down some beautiful oak trees to get that building in place. But
that's the biggest building on campus.
It is the biggest building. It's a marquee building.
It had to be. I mean, that's the Science and Technology.
It is, and that's where the theater is.
And labs in there and all kind of stuff.
Yes, and it was our marquee building, and that's what we needed, and that's why And unfortunately, there are a couple oak trees had to sacrifice their existence.
I have to squeeze in one more break before we say goodbye, only because the midday lottery numbers have arrived from Harrisburg, and we'll check them out and then be right back.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two are 0505, pick three, 159, 159, pick four, 7906, pick five, 88288. Wild ball for each of those is 7. The treasure hunt, 3, 8, 11, 15, 22. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Put your trivia knowledge to the test and help a great cause at the same time at Connecting to Tomorrow's Trivia Night, Saturday, October 21st. Doors open at 6 at the Lindora American Legion Hall. Tickets are $15 each, and you can have up to 8 players per team. It's BYOB, adults only, and food will be available. Proceeds benefit Connecting to Tomorrow's mentoring programs. You can get tickets at Maze Music, the Butler Media Group, or call 724-431-6025.
Since 1938, Hunter Truck Sales has been a leader in the trucking industry. With 19 locations, we've grown to be the largest heavy truck dealership network in the Northeast. Proudly, Hunter has employed generations of families in the region and was recently honored to be named 2017 Family Business of the Year by the Pittsburgh Business Times. Check it out online at huntertrucksales.com for truck inventory, careers, and locations. Across our network, Hunter will provide solutions for all your trucking needs.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back, good friends. Boy, time flies here. We're out of time. What a great honor much deserved for Ray Steffler, named a distinguished alum. At Butler County Community College. He'll be honored at the Oak Hills dinner tomorrow night, along with the other distinguished alum this year, Lucille Shapiro. Ray, congratulations. This is quite an honor. It really is.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well-deserved as well.
Well-deserved indeed, yeah.
I thank you. It's been a pleasure. I've had fun. And on a parting note on my behalf, I just remember one thing. Our football team is undefeated.
Since 1965.
That's right. As Jake Frill keeps reminding me of that on occasion.
You have a BC3 Alumni Association shirt on.
Correct.
Blue and white, the colors of the BC3. That would be my next trivia investigation. I wonder when they decided on the colors of the school. And I wonder if those were the original colors. You know?
I don't know that. That
changes.
I believe they were, but the shade changed.
Mm-hmm.
And don't ask me.
It's PMS 300. Yeah. That's the color now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Penn State has Tulsa blue and white, a little different color of blue, mm-hmm. but world-famous colors. But that weren't the original colors from Penn State.
I wasn't aware of that.
You'll never believe me if I tell you. Can you imagine the Penn State football team decked out in pink and black?
Oh.
It'd be appropriate this month for breast cancer awareness, but, no, I could not.
That was the original colors, yeah. Well, that's my trivia question for
you. Okay, good.
Ray, good to see you, my friend. I sincerely mean that. Good to talk with you,
David,
today.
Same to you. Talking to the matriarch of Butler County Radio.
I don't know about that. And Michelle Jameson, always good to see you too, my friend.
You too, Dave.
You do great work with the Alumni Association. I know it's been a chore putting together a database of all of the alums, which is now obviously way up in the thousands. The biggest problem is some of the names change.
Yeah, that too. You know,
and locations.
After marriage locations. And everything, yeah. And I didn't know we had alums in Ecuador and Europe and everything else. Yeah. Folks, coming up on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn, we will be chatting with Mike Liebler from Connecting to Tomorrow. And also, and I can't wait to talk to this lady, Dr. Belisa Varanich. She's going to tell us that we're breathing incorrectly, and if we could learn how to breathe right, we would take care of a lot of our problems. And she may have something. I'm not kidding. She'll be with us on Monday as well. Enjoy your weekend. I'm Dave Malarkey. See you Monday on It's Your Turn here on WISR 680 in Butler.
This is Butler's hometown radio station, where you wake up with Dave Malarkey every weekday morning starting at 5:30. Complete local news, sports, and weather as the sun comes.